Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast, the podcast for serious lacrosse players and their supporters to help further their development and navigate their way throughout their lacrosse careers. And now, here are your hosts, New England Lacrosse Journal's Kyle Devitt and Jack Piatelli.
Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Devitt. Alongside me, Mr. Jack Piatelli. Jack, had the pleasure of just hanging out with you this week. It was great.
A lot of fun. Anytime I can spend time with you on the field, I learn so much. The knowledge you have, the way you evaluate players is above and beyond anyone I've ever been around. It was fantastic.
You're too kind and also lying. So, but I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you so much. We have a great guest today. One of the new coaches. It's fall ball. Everybody's kicking off a new season. We're getting ready, getting excited. And we have new UMass Lowell head coach, Drew Kelleher. Coach, how's it going?
Awesome. Really excited to be back in New England and really excited to chat with you guys.
Jack and I were talking before we started recording. And one of the things I said was, this dude took Manhattan to a championship in their conference. And that's no small feat. That's pretty impressive. And I don't care how long it took you. Super impressive. How do you feel about the achievements that you had with the Jaspers last year and where you're at now with the Riverhawks?
Yeah, I mean, listen, Manhattan was a really special place. And I'm really grateful to my players, first and foremost, coaching staff. I had Coach Aderna with me for 7 years there. And obviously, him taking over as a head coach now is really special to me to watch. It was not an easy turnaround, and we knew that going in, but I was so proud of what we accomplished. We really felt the change happened right as COVID hit. We could kind of tell things were trending the right way, but really proud of all we accomplished. Winning a championship this year with those guys was really special. And then this opportunity became real this summer, and for my family and I, it felt right. It felt like the right time and things aligned. To get back to New England is just really, really refreshing. And fall ball's been great so far.
Coach, we all know that attitude is so important for the players to have a great attitude going into any season, especially freshmen coming in. And from what I'm told, I got heard a little story that you've really turned the tide very quickly with the attitude and respect for the program. You had a player walk into your office and asked you if you had some time, a minute to talk. And you told the player to walk back out, close the door, knock on the door. I'll ask you to come in and then I'll let you know if I have a minute to talk with you. So that's a great learning lesson for the player and a good way to let the boys know you're ready to go and you're serious about this program and what it takes to play at the Division I level.
Yeah, we're going to ask our guys to carry themselves professionally all the time. And I always bust their chops when they just come marching in. I said, if I walked in your dorm room, how you feel? But yeah, no, we're excited about the attitudes. These guys embrace everything we're asking, and that's how they carry themselves and their lifestyle and when showing up on the field. And that's all we could ask. This group is really fun to be around. It's a really grateful, humble, and hungry team. And again, they've embraced everything we've asked, and they're trying as best they can. And as a new head coach, that's all you can ask for.
Coach, last year, UMass Lowell, I know you weren't there, but I watched a couple of their games, and it was a frustrating team because you could see there was a lot of talent there, and late in games, they would find a way, a lot of teams find a way to win. They kind of found a way to lose, and I don't mind saying that on record. I watched enough to go, this is tough. I think one of the jobs that you have to kind of execute in there is what you're already doing, which is bringing structure and a change in attitude to that team. Is there anything else that you've implemented that you feel has already had an impact just a couple weeks in?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I have a ton of respect for the previous coaching staff. They did a great job of bringing this program to Division I, but the roster has a lot of good players. So I think it's important to acknowledge winning games Division I is really, really hard. I think these guys have certainly bought in, because we've talked about that since we got here. We have to do things a little bit differently to get a different result. I think the most important thing that these guys need to understand is they have to invest when nobody's looking. We need guys playing low ball at 6 a.m., shooting when nobody's out there. And that's when you start to win games, because your habits are formed there. And these guys, they've been posting pictures of themselves working when nobody's around. And it's my hope and my beliefs, and that very strongly believe in it, that if you're working when nobody's looking, you're going to play well when the lights come on. And I think these guys are really trying, and they're bought into that, which again, as a head coach, it's all you can ask is the effort.
Coach, now most of the freshmen coming in this year are on campus now. You inherited. Now, were you able to pick up any late players through the portal or through recruiting in the short period of time you've been at UMass?
Sure. So we could have.
I toast out.
Kind of having been through this at Manhattan, taking over a program that we want to revitalize, I made the decision consciously this year to not divide the locker room. I didn't want a Kelleher guy mixed amongst the program that was. And I think there's talent here, so I wasn't necessarily desperate to do that. But I think from a cultural standpoint, and I've said that to this locker room, I'm with you. I don't want to divide this. I don't want to just recruit over guys right away. I want to evaluate this thing and see what we have and see what we can grow with. And my administrators have reiterated to me countless times, let's not take any shortcuts. And that I didn't want to jump the gun and just bring in somebody who, sure, they might be talented, but my philosophy in recruiting is I want OKGs. I want our kind of guys. I mean, I think being patient there helped us. And I think it'll be a good thing in the long term to have the right guys in the room.
So obviously it's more important to build a culture over time versus taking the shortcut and trying to build a winner with picking up players through the portal.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not a huge transfer recruiter, to be honest with you. I think they're a time and a place and they will certainly use it when needed, but how we're going to turn this thing is being young and developing the guys. And again, I'm really passionate about getting the right guys here, not always the best. That's something that really paid off for me in my career. Every stop I've had, guys that are great, grateful to be in our locker room and excited for the opportunity. Those are the guys you get the most out of. And ultimately, as a coach, I think guys that are willing to work the hardest are going to be your best players no matter what.
Coach, speaking about bringing people in, you've brought in former Williams assistant Connor Samuelson to help with the defense and a former OSU guy in Ian Moore to do offense. Those are pretty high, I would say high profile, well-respected assistants. How did you find a way to bring those guys into the program?
Sure. Through the process, one of the things that attracted me to this position was the resourcing for assistant coaches. That's something I'm really passionate about. I think coaching staff, you have to get along and you have to be getting really, really excited, young, talented coaches on your staff in order to build something. The school provided me an opportunity to go out and attract really good coaches. Connor's a guy that I'd have my eye on. He'd come work a lot of my camps at Manhattan. And quite frankly, he's a guy you see at every recruiting event in the summer. I mean, he's just everywhere and he's relentless and he's a very smart recruiter and he's very detailed. And then Coach Moore, I'd gotten to know over the last few years, but through the interview process, he blew me away. And Coach Myers spoke really highly of him. And you know, I think I hit home runs and getting to know these guys. And I think the players love him most importantly. And I'm just grateful to work alongside two really good guys and to build this thing with two people I trust.
Do you think it's helps the program that you're bringing in basically a guy with NESCAC and a guy with Big Ten experience in terms of both building, recruiting, and coaching? Is that kind of something? Because that's a different flavor, I think, than I would expect of a UMass Lowell like coaching staff.
Yeah, I think one, credibility with your players is really important. I think Connor Samuelson was a candidate for National Assistant Coach of the Year in Division III, which is a really big deal. And Coach Moore, obviously coming from Ohio State, I think you have instant credibility with your players, these two guys. That being said, I like the diversity of their backgrounds. I think the ability to come from different angles with everything we're always talking about is really important. One thing I definitely like is both of them played Division III lacrosse. I think there's a level of hunger and drive for the opportunity when you get to Division I that these guys bring. Very similar to, again, a guy that I worked really well with at Manhattan, with Coach O'Dierna. I think those backgrounds really can help us strive forward and keep us humble and always working hard.
Coach, what does your fall program actually look like? How many times a week do you practice? And how long is the fall program? And tell us a little bit about what your plans are for scrimmages.
Yeah. First couple weeks that we basically do purely conditioning. I want to make sure these guys are in shape and we get up at 6 a.m. and just make sure we're ready to practice the way we want to practice once we get going. Tomorrow is really jumping into our first kind of hour and a half practice. And we will build up through October 16th. We're heading down to Yale. So we'll play Yale and Sacred Heart, which I think will be a great opportunity for our guys. And then we'll kind of evaluate after that and figure out which way we want to go for the remainder of fall. But right now it's been primarily conditioning, but starting to jump into the full practices actually tomorrow, which man, I can't wait for.
Coach, just checking out your roster and following the team for a while, This is like 85% New England guys. UMass Lowell is very New England heavy. Do you have not necessarily plans to change that, but to kind of adjust that and get a little bit more of a national focus in your recruiting trail?
Yeah, I think that's something that's really important. And again, we got to make sure we're getting the right guys for us. But I do think we can have a little bit more of a national draw. Obviously, I've spent a lot of time out of Long Island. Even when I was at Boston, I recruited Long Island really hard. I think we can get some very blue-collar Long Island guys here. I also think you'll see us spending a lot of time north of the border. I think we can draw some really talented Canadian and hopefully start adding some goal scoring from there. But I do think we'll always geographically draw locally. I think our price tag is something that I really am passionate about when I was taking this job. An affordable, good education is not the easiest thing to find these days. So I do think that really will always attract Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Connecticut, Rhode Island guys. But we do want to spread going upstate New York, Long Island, Canada, and Mid-Atlantic as well.
Yeah, as a New Hampshire native, people always ask me, what's the closest school you can go to? I'm like, I think it's UMass Lowell, just because I live in New Hampshire where actual people live instead of up north. But I definitely see that. And I think that UMass Lowell has kind of, when they went Division One, kind of became a, oh, well, I'm a crossover kid. I'm a good athlete. I'll go to UMass Lowell. I think that's a good fit for me. And the thing that struck me when you were just speaking about Long Island blue collar is the blue collar comment. I do feel like the school has that reputation. It has, like, the program has that reputation. So I think if you can kind of tap into that vein and bring it across the country, I mean, I think you can really get some good players into the program.
Yeah, I mean, again, through the interview process, I think our athletic administration here realizes that there's some untapped potential with what this program can be and what you can draw, or who you can draw, excuse me. A program that I grew up right next to and watching is UAlbany, right? They were Division II, and Coach Marr took over and obviously built a program, but UAlbany wasn't what we picture UAlbany to be 20 years ago. I think probably a little bit longer, maybe 25 years ago, but that's kind of how I view this program. I think it's a city that, you look at our hockey program, right? I mean, the whole town comes out. They lead the country in attendance. They're always in the national tournament. I think we can be that sport in the spring here, and I'm really excited to try and build that. We got to get some positive momentum and get this community behind us, but I think it's there. And you guys certainly know this. The New England community is loving lacrosse right now, and I think we can capitalize there.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the hockey program. I know it's a huge draw, me being a UNH guy, of course. I'm a little upset about our pole position going into the new season, but have you had any contact with the hockey coach about kind of how getting some Canadians down might actually help you guys out?
Sure. Actually, kind of a crazy connection. I started coaching at Hamilton College in the NESCAC way back in 2009, actually. When I was there, the head hockey coach was Norm Bazin, who is currently the head hockey coach at UMass Lowell. So I got to see Coach Bazin when my wife and I came up after accepting the job and chatted with him and been exchanging emails quite often with the assistant coach about meeting up and talking some recruiting strategy. So that's certainly in our plans. But, you know, what they've been able to do and sustain here over a long period is remarkable and something we hope to emulate.
Coach, you were a great offensive player at University of Vermont. Is that carried over in terms of your philosophy, the way you played as a player and the way you like to see your offense execute out in the field?
Yeah, I mean, listen, you'll see it with the guys I tend to recruit. I like smaller guys like I am. My philosophy's evolved. I think as a coach, you got to constantly be evolving and pivoting and reacting. I think what I'm trying to figure out right now here is how do we maximize the players we have and what systems I've ran can work here with our personnel. But certainly, if we can run, we're going to try and do that, which I enjoy is playing in transition. But if you watched our Manhattan teams last couple of years, we were very strong defensively, and we wanted our offense to complement that. We didn't win a ton of faceoffs, so we had to play a certain way. So what I'm really trying to do right now is just evaluate where we are, where are our strengths, and what gives us the best chance to win games, not just win stats.
That makes a lot of sense, because a lot of coaches, I shouldn't say a lot of coaches, but some coaches have a system and they'll just try and run that system because they're very comfortable with the system regardless of what they have for players. You're in a situation where you're still evaluating your players and you have to run an offense that plays to their strengths and not their weaknesses.
Yeah, and that's something, quite honestly, you talk about things I learned in Manhattan that I plan on bringing, just like I don't want to bring a Kelleher or Cream. I don't want to jam these guys into my system. I think a mistake I made early on, again, when I took over there, was I think I tried to play a certain way that didn't give us a great chance to win games. We kind of evaluated, okay, where can we be really good? And we decided we were going to play some defense and control games. And it doesn't mean you play slow. It doesn't mean you play boring. It just means you're going to put your team in the best position to win, which as a head coach is your job. So we got to figure out what that recipe is here. We got to figure out what our secret sauce is going to be. And hey, if it's trying to win games 21-20, we'll do it. If it's try to win games 4-3, we'll do that. I just want to try and hopefully bring some trophies here eventually.
When you were running your system with the players and you weren't having any success, did you find that the players didn't have the confidence that they needed because of the system they were in?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think whether we like it or not, we're all a little bit results driven, right? And if the scoreboard's not saying what you wanted to see, I think you start to have doubts. And as a coach too. So I think it was probably back in 2018 when we got Brendan Krebs, who ended up being a really All-American goalie. Well, wasn't All-American. I thought he should have been. But we kind of had to play to our strength. He was our guy. And we certainly played that way. But yeah, early on, I'll never forget, we were trying to run with Robert Morris my second year. And that didn't go well for us. So that's kind of when we sat down and said, all right, what do we need to do to win some games? And we kind of had to adapt.
New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal will return after this message.
Are you serious about playing your sport in college? Do you need a flexible education that allows you to maintain your practice and competition schedules while also preparing you to succeed at the next level? You should check out the University of Nebraska High School. UNHS is accredited and offers more than 100 online courses, including NCAA-approved courses to protect your academic eligibility. Students could earn a UNHS diploma or take a single course for transfer credit. Courses are college prep, self-paced, and available 24/7, 365. Enroll anytime and take up to a year to complete a course. Visit highschool.nebraska.edu today.
Dedication, skills, focus, and drive to play at the highest level. Lachesis is committed to providing the coaching and curriculum that will allow boys and girls to learn and grow as individuals and as teammates. With an emphasis on skill development and academic excellence, their players have led the country in college recruiting for the past 10 years. With over 800-plus players moving on to play in college and over 130-plus high school All-Americans, Lachesis has been able to set the nationwide standard unmatched in the sport of lacrosse. To learn more, log on to www.lachesis.com.
Looking to keep up with all the latest news and information on New England lacrosse? New England Lacrosse Journal and LaxJournal.com are the premier resources for information and inspiration on the New England lacrosse scene. Have every issue of New England Lacrosse Journal, the magazine, delivered to your home or office. And don't forget to stay in the game every day with a digital subscription to LaxJournal.com to receive daily digital lacrosse coverage on club lacrosse, college commits, prep and high school, Division I, II, and III colleges, showcases, rankings, and much more. Get in the game and behind the scenes now by logging on to LaxJournal.com. Just click on the subscribe button and start the subscription that is right for you today. New England Lacrosse Journal is a Siemens Media publication. Siemens Media. Inspiring. Informative. Insightful.
I just remembered where I did meet you from. It was definitely an email about Krebs where I voted him third team.
Oh,
that's what it is. That's what it is. I was like, I have talked to this dude about something. And it's funny because I have a vote in the All-American process for Inside the Cross, just the media All-Americans. And I always
how did you get that?
Yeah, I've been, if you do it long enough, they give it to anyone. I'll be honest with you. You do it long enough, you'll get a vote.
I guess so.
And I usually scour for stats and tape for that third team spot because I feel like the first two goalies are always, everyone already knows who they are. But that third team spot, like Will Mark from LIU, I voted for him and they're like, really? I was like, you'll see. And yep. Or look at his numbers or any, he had a 20 save game last weekend, something like that. So I think that's important. And if you can get one of those signature players and you get the attention of the media, I feel like coaches like you're doing this podcast right now.
Yep.
You're talking to us right now. This is going to go out on a national level. The more coaches can do things like that to promote their program, the more the media will pay attention to you. Like it's cool to be annoying to us. That's what I wish like every coach understood. Like, be annoying. Email me every time you win a game. Every single time. Send me your stats. I'll be like, oh yeah, that's a good win. Like, eventually you'll have the win where I'm like, okay, I'm not going to block you on the email. Do you know what I mean? Like, which is why I really enjoy it. Cause I remember that exchange that you and I had. I was like, I got you. He's very good. I agree. I think I even put him on a draft board for pros. I'm pretty sure I did. That was the follow-up.
Yeah. I think Brendan, it's so funny statistically, if you look at Brendan, this was his fifth year. So his true senior year and his junior year. I mean, he was statistically one of the best. He was right there with everybody. This year, statistically, he just didn't have as good a year, but he won. And I think the cool part about Brendan was he didn't get named first team all league, not even second team all league. And I grabbed him. I'm like, you all good? And he goes, let's go win. And then that weekend we won and ended up signing with the Whip Stakes. So yeah, we gotta get some of those guys here. And the cool part about a guy like Brendan, Brendan had zero offers coming out of high school. He's a backup goalie at Chaminade, didn't play in a game. And we saw him and came to our prospect day. And again, talking about how I recruit, he wanted an opportunity. He was grateful. And every day he wanted the opportunity he was grateful. We showed him with how he played and how he worked. And I was really proud of him.
If you could build a team with all of those players or a team full of All-Americans, which one would you do?
For me and my personality, I would take the first.
Right.
A staple of my programs is we're going to be grateful. And that's me as a person. It's everything. You guys asked me to be on this podcast. It's never lost on me. I'm one of 70 Division I head coaches. And I still pinch myself saying, how the heck did we do this? It's very humbling. And that's how I want my players, my coaching staff to be. And I hope that shows up with how we play. I hope we're diving for every ground ball and back up. And we're hopefully going to create the UMass little swim and dive team because we don't have one. We're going to be all over the place. And that's just kind of my attitude. But Kyle, to answer your question directly, the guys I've begged to play for me have never been my best players. And I think especially at UMass Lowell, guys that are really, really chomping at the bit to be here, those are the guys we're going to get the most out of.
No question about it, Coach. I couldn't agree more. I think today with the whole recruiting and top 100 recruits and everybody with social media and promoting their videos and this and that and the other thing before they even get to college and the parents, and I try not to pay any attention to it, but it's not what did in high school. It's what you do in college. And when you step on that campus, it's a whole new world, and you're either welcome or you're going to be out pretty soon if you don't roll up the sleeves and go to work every day.
Yeah, I mean, there's this many stories about the top 100 recruits who are successful. I think there's got to be more of top 100 recruits who thought it would be easy and get passed. And that's, I've recruited those guys. And I just know it works for my personality. And we're going to be demanding of our players when they get here. And I know that there are certain things I look for on a visit and what I look for at a recruiting event that I know will click with us. And it worked so far, and hopefully it continues to.
What are some of those characteristics?
Just it's an attitude of truly excited to be there. When from the second somebody gets out of their car and I come out to shake their hand, that kid thinks he's doing you a favor if he's really excited to be here. And when it's 6 a.m. and it's cold in January, I want the guy that was excited to get out of the car and come to school here. And it's hard to really put my finger on. It's not necessarily a tangible metric, but it's a feeling you get when somebody is really passionate about where they are. And that's so important to me through the process.
Can I guess that you won't recruit the kid whose parents carry their bag?
Yeah, no, that doesn't happen. that won't happen.
I love that. I love that that's becoming a thing.
Or runs over to the sideline during a game and hand him some water.
Oh, God.
Now, if that same kid goes up to mom after the game, and not the same kid, but if a kid goes over to his parents and you hear him say thank you, that's really important. If I hear a high school kid say thanks, Dad, for driving me here, that's awesome. And that's something that we're looking for. Again, gratitude is everything.
Coach, talk a little bit about your philosophy on defense. Again, I'm sure there were some defenses you didn't like playing against, defenders you didn't like playing against. What do you like to see in terms of defensive personnel, size, skill set, and your philosophy on how to play defense and what's worked well for you?
Yeah, I think part of the reason I hired Coach Samuelson is talking to him through the interview process. We aligned on a lot of stuff. He talks a lot about being confrontational. And to me, that's really important on the defensive side of the ball. Embracing contact and creating contact on our terms is everything. I think simplicity on the defensive end is just like on the offensive end. Your guys have to feel like they're playing, not just doing. And that's something that Coach O'Dearna did a great job with the mid at and taught me of, hey, you don't need four or five defenses for everything you see offensively. The ability to let your guys react and assess and make their own decisions is critical. And that's something we're going to do here. And Coach Samuelson's done a great job already of talking about just our core pillars, our fundamentals of posture, of volume, and where we're going to put guys, where we're going to get beat, getting beat the right way. So I think defensively, again, we've tried to simplify and make sure our guys know what we're trying to accomplish and make sure they feel good about it.
I feel like a lot of defense is disruption, right? Like it's not, I think the way a lot of people look at defense is, especially now with the shot clock, is, oh, we have to do this to stop this person because that's their best guy, or we have to stop this play because they run this play and it scores all the time. It's really just changing the thing they do best, right? Like, I feel like if you can do that on defense, that's all you're there for, because you will get scored on. Like, everyone gets scored on. Every defense gets scored on. No one's perfect. Like, even the great Maryland gets scored on. You know what I mean? So I like talking to coaches that have that philosophy of just like, okay, well, we have to have this philosophy and we have to stick with it because it's going to work in the long term. Right?
Yeah, I think you got to understand who you are too, right? It's not very dissimilar to an offensive end of the field. I think, can you go out and play guys, or are you better off playing in a little bit and forcing them to a weak hand? But you got to figure out who you are first and then kind of gradually get to what you're talking about, which is, how do our strengths disrupt what they do? And we got to figure that out as a staff here. Again, we're still really trying to figure out, what do we have? That's part of the reason we do conditioning for 2 weeks is, this fall, I want these guys to be in great shape so we can see when they're at their best, who can do what. But on the defensive side, like you talked about, Kyle, we do want to disrupt, but how do we do that without costing ourselves at times? And that's what we're evaluating throughout this fall.
Well, my philosophy in terms of defense is, I think sometimes, to your point, there's so much structure and slide packages, and you've got players who are overthinking and overplaying because they're thinking too much on the field instead of just going out and reacting and playing. And in some cases, not even overreacting, just playing and seeing what's in front of you and defending and be aggressive. But when players are thinking too much on offense and they're thinking too much on defense, that tells me they don't have the confidence to be out there and execute, and the results speak for themselves.
Yeah, you don't want to paralyze them, right? I think on either end of the field, and this is probably, for me, one of the most daunting challenges of trying to get a system in. You want to get your stuff in without stalling your guys, right? You still want them to be able to play. And I watch The Office all the time. I love to say, keep it simple, stupid. It's on my whiteboard in my office. If we're slowing down because of what I'm trying to do, that's bad coaching. We need to be able to play at a pace and make decisions with an educated kind of background. We need to be able to play fast, and faster and simpler a lot of times is better on either side. But on the defensive side of the ball, I think it's everything. If you're playing faster than the offense, a lot of times you're going to get a lot more stops, and that helps you.
My first coaching experience, I was the head coach at Brookline High right out of Springfield College. I did go to Springfield College, Kyle.
Check your bingo card, everybody.
I remember I sat down with the great coach, Bussy Adam, and he gave me like five or six offensive plays, three man ups, three clears, three rides. And I'm going through these plays and these rides and all these different things. I'm like, oh yeah, we got all this great stuff. And then I realized, well, my players, one, they're not in very good shape, and two, they can't catch and throw. So by the end of the year, we were running one play, we had one ride, one clear, and if we had one man up, we were really lucky. But we were better with one of everything than five of everything, that's for sure. And I learned real quick, you gotta work with what you got and make the best of it.
No doubt. And just like that, we always say six guys on the wrong page together is way better than five guys on my page and one guy on his own, right? Like, if we're doing the wrong thing together, at least we're together. And I remember when I first got into coaching, I had this laminated play sheet and it would all kinds of lingo on there. Now it's just reminders to me. And literally at the top for every game, I write, keep it simple, stupid. Like, what is the easiest thing that our guys can do fast? That's everything. And sometimes I think as coaches, we like to make it our goal or make it our stop. It's not. It's the players. And I think our job is to empower them and put them in positions to be successful. But a lot of times, less is a lot more there.
Over your years of coaching, do you find that the players that are coming into play for you, their skill set is greater now than it was 10 years ago? Or do you still find that players are coming in with bad habits and you're trying to find ways to fix their skill sets? I know a lot of programs like to work, and I'm a big skill set guy, and find that you never can stop working on your skill sets no matter what position you play.
When I was at Boston, we started the program, and Coach Foley is a great mentor for me and somebody I still talk to all the time. But that first year, and I'll never forget our first week and getting through fall ball, we had to step back and be like, we really have a team full of freshmen and we need to coach everything. And what that taught me was how to really build a player. And when you ask about what the skill sets are coming in, I just think sometimes high school players prioritize the wrong thing. And that's kind of what we have to talk about with these guys when they get here is, okay, your toe drag is awesome. That looked cool in your highlights. Well, now when we're going up against a Vermont defenseman who Coach Fipes has coached to break down and really guard you, that's not going to work. So we kind of have to reprioritize and rewire what's important. A lot of those skills that these guys have, those are talent and that's stuff you can work with. But we got to refocus on where we'd want to be good, which is what is the highest percentage shot to take? Where are we taking our shots from? Or how are we even throwing the ball? I think the number one skill you have to teach every high school kid coming in now is just to throw the ball hard and be able to catch and throw it at full speed. They're so worried about some other stuff that they've lost sight of, hey, I got to be able to throw a pass 50 times in a game. I got to be good at that. So we just kind of shift the priorities and talk about what we need to be good at to win rather than what makes us the best.
So when you go into a practice, how much time do you spend on developing their skills?
Sure. Honestly, we'll probably do about 40 minutes a day on individual skills, whether it's teaching dodging, teaching how we transition the ball forward, how we teach transitioning the ball behind us, to how we stoop, to all of the basic fundamentals. And then we tell our guys, it's your job to work on it outside of practice, because just like school, they send you on homework, you know, practice, we got to perfect it. And there's just not enough hours in the day to work on our schemes and the high level skills that we want to get to. So we'll typically do probably 45 minutes in a practice of skill sets of some kind, and then work more into the team concepts.
I think one of the things I heard the most talking to coaches this summer was, great player, great talent, needs weight room. Oh, and I feel like I heard it more this year than I've ever heard it in my life. And what do you think that's just an anomaly, or do you think it's just that the kids, I don't know if kids are smaller. I think it's right, because I see kids play and I'm just like, that's a 24? That's a 25? Like, some of them are massive and then the rest of them are just really skinny. And some of them can be tall and all that stuff. But like, I've seen kids that are like 6'5", like 160. I'm like, how are you walking? How are you playing lacrosse? Like, it doesn't make any sense to me.
How much of that might be COVID, right?
Yeah.
Year and a half, 2 years of not being or having access to certain things. I'm really lucky. The team I walked into, I mean, we left practice and Coach Moore, right, coming from the Big Ten, he was like, we have some Big Ten athletes here. We are a big and strong team. I'm actually kind of, Kyle, going the other way here. We're going to do a little bit less weight room. I think we're really big and strong. I'm putting a huge emphasis on the skill development this fall, but I think it's so important for high school kids to get in the weight room. I think it's a great place to obviously develop physically, but I think one of the real tricks of the weight room is confidence, right? You can set benchmarks and cross them and accomplish goals very visibly. So I think obviously a guy that spends a lot of time in the weight room, a lot of times has a little bit more confidence, and that's something you can really see from guys who spend time there.
Yeah, just going through your roster, I think I just counted 12 guys over 6'1". Not what I expected.
You can see my Manhattan team. We got off the bus. We were a smaller group, but we were quick. I mean, for me to stand in the huddle right now, I'm getting like neck pain looking up. We have some really big guys, which is cool. They're huge and they're athletic. So it's a different huddle for me to get eye contact, but I'm enjoying it.
Coach, talk a little bit about what it costs to attend UMass, scholarships, what you're allowed, how you allocate them, and number of players you like to have on your roster.
Sure. So okay. With roster size, I'm a believer of being loyal to our guys and loyal to the guys I recruit. It's not It's not my philosophy to carry a roster of more than 50. It's my goal. Some of the best teams I've ever coached were this past year, were 39 guys. I don't want anybody to get lost on my roster. That's really important to me. One of the attractive parts about this job is the in-state tuition for Massachusetts. We have regional rates for other New England schools. And quite honestly, the biggest draw is we're fully funded. I'm fortunate to have 12.6 scholarships to work with, and that excites me. Along with this price tag, it means we can recruit as effectively as anybody in the country. We have the same bullets in the holster. But yeah, no, from a roster size side of things, again, we want guys to feel valued. The guys at the bottom of our roster should never feel like a bottom guy. They're as important as everybody. And I found that keeping it to a manageable number for me and for our coaching staff has made guys feel that value.
Coach, there's been a lot of movement with conferences in New England with the creation of the A-10. I'm assuming you guys are still staying in the America East, but other teams might come in. Have you kind of gotten any feedback on that at all?
I haven't. That's one of those things, quite honestly, that I've tried to put blinders on and put some earplugs in. Obviously, we gained Bryant and Merrimack this year, which I think are two great additions for us. I just think it's going to be an evolving thing as the Power Five and football do whatever it is they're eventually going to do. So unfortunately, I have no control over it. So I try to keep my head down and coach. It's fun to hear the rumblings and think about where it's going, but I don't have anything educated, unfortunately.
Merrimack, UMass Lowell sounds like a great rivalry game that hasn't happened that needs to be a rivalry game.
It should be. And Coach Morgan is a hell of a lacrosse coach. They do a great job over there. We have so much respect for them. But just geographically, I think it's something we should be pumping up. And he and I have talked a little bit. I think it's awesome to have two really good Division I programs up here. I think it's an exciting spot.
Yeah, actually, how far are those schools? 20, less than 20 miles, right? Something like that?
So the first house we were looking at, we actually almost lived right next to their field. And I told my wife, like, I don't know if we can do this.
That's tampering, honey. We can't live here. I don't think we can do
this. Watching practice and getting NCAA violations just by going for a walk. So yeah, no, it's very close. I think it's about 20, 25 minutes away from here.
Yeah, 100%. Well, Coach, we really enjoyed having you on. Thank you so much for your time. So it's been very interesting getting to know the new UMass Lowell coach. I remember when the job came up, I was like, oh, they're not going to fill that for a while. And then, like, boom. I actually got a DM. I could have broken it early, and I didn't look at my DMs. I was like, oh, huh, that's good. I was like, I saw the hire, and I was like, that's a good hire. All right.
Very, very humbling, and I appreciate you saying that. But the reason I'm here is they want to be good at men's lacrosse. And that was apparent from the second we lost to Vermont in the national tournament. They care. They really do here. And I think they know what this place could be if the head coach doesn't screw it up. So it's my job to keep us going forward and hopefully big things ahead for the River Hawks.
Well, Coach, again, it was great to catch up with you. I remember the days back at BU coming in there with all the Bryant equipment and outfitting you guys. And you guys really looked very good that year. That's for sure when you're out in the field. Best of luck unpacking the boxes and congratulations on the newborn little girl and best of luck this season.
Well, thank you, guys. Really, really appreciate it. I'm sure we'll see you guys on the road soon.
All right. Take care, Coach.
Thanks, Coach. Thanks again for listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. For Jack Piatelli and our amazing producer, Steve Saffron, I'm Kyle Devitt. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Also, listen to the podcast on the website, laxjournal.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at NELaxJournal, Instagram at New England Lacrosse Journal, LaxJournal on Facebook, and our email address, chasingthegoal@laxjournal.com. Join us again next time as we go chasing the goal. Chasing the Goal, a Siemens Media podcast.